and that the insert card faces out, not in. If it faced in, it would still be a
mystery. Yeah.
But since it faces out, it's not there.
It's easy to check that.
Yep.
Steve, you looked like somebody just told you Santa wasn't real. That first look on your face.
Oh.
Huh?
Sad.
When
Santa's not real.
What?
Sorry, Cash.
What the heck? Oh, man.
Oh,
you gotta say something like spoiler alert or something.
But the Marine took my wife.
Yeah.
Oh,
no. You know that commercial?
Yeah. Okay, count it down.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I'm James Wygant, Associate Editor of the American Stamp Dealer and Collector, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
It's hard to send up. It's hard to send up.
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 57.
Yay!
Wow.
I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, Steve, Don, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today, and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Or you can call us at any time and leave a message at country code 1-949-873-4298. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher, and many more. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news. Who is Eduardo Munoz? Part 2. Hashtag stamp stories. Hashtag freaks and errors of the movie. Update. And our expert topic of the week is black blot stamps. Say that 3 times fast. No takers?
Yes. Mm. Black blot stamps 3 times fast.
Okay, so stamp news. This is part 2 of Who is Eduardo Munoz? Ruth Watt is joining us via a phone conversation to give us a behind-the-scenes look at this short film project. Hello, Ruth, and welcome to Stamp Show Today. Can you please introduce yourself and tell us more about your project?
My name is Ruth Tapp. I am originally from Scotland in the United Kingdom, which is why I've got this funny accent. And about 10 years ago, I moved to London to become an actress. I've been working as an actress ever since then. Then in March this year, I suffered from something called a spontaneous pneumothorax, which is a collapsed lung, which just happens for no reason. I was just walking down the street and my lung collapsed, which was very unpleasant. I was in hospital for 3 weeks. I had to have surgery on my lung. And when I got out of hospital, I spent a long time in the house, not really able to do very much, feeling sorry for myself, watching daytime television and getting very bored. And then it was probably about 2 weeks after I came out of hospital when the first letter arrived for Mr. Eduardo Munoz. And it really got me wondering, who is this guy? Why am I suddenly getting letters for him? First of all, it just started off with one letter, and then it was two, and then three, and then suddenly there was a whole pile of them. They seemed to be coming from all over the place. And it inspired me to think about, you know, who is this guy? Why is he getting so much mail? Who are these people sending these letters? So I stopped feeling sorry for myself and watching boring UK daytime television, and instead I began writing the script for Eduardo Munoz, which it was a short, dark comedy inspired by The Wrong Mail.
Ruth, can you please explain the plot of your movie and what format the movie will be released in?
Eduardo Munoz is a short, dark comedy film about a man on the edge and a lot of letters. As I said, inspired by my real-life experience of getting this unwanted mail. So the main character has shut himself away from the world in an attempt to get away from the thousands of unwanted letters he's receiving each week. He's become housebound. He can't leave the house because he's so tormented by all this mail. And he's got to the point where he's now living upstairs because the downstairs of his house is just overtaken with all this piles of mail. And the sort of main narrative of our film is a battle of wills that unfolds between the man and the post lady who's delivering the mail. It all begins one day when he finally decides to fight back and starts posting the letters for Mr. Eduardo Muniz back onto the street. There's also a third character of an old lady. She's very important to the story, and she comes around every morning around the same time as all the mail gets delivered to the man's house. But I don't want to give away too much about the story, so I don't want to ruin it for everybody. But that'll maybe give you a flavour of the kind of a sort of quirky and unusual plot that we've got. It's going to be a short film, probably around 10 minutes long, possibly slightly shorter. The reason for the length is that's the perfect length for festivals. So we're trying to keep it short and sweet and leave the audience wanting more, not wishing it was shorter than it was.
Please share with our listeners where this project is taking place and how people can donate to your project.
We are filming the project hopefully around March 2016, and it's going to be filmed in East London in a place called Leytonstone. We've already secured some great locations, and I think it's going to look really good. What we need, of course, is the funds to make it. We're currently raising money on Indiegogo, and we've had an amazing campaign so far. We've had contributors from over 17 countries, 232 of them at the moment, which is just amazing to me that so many people have wanted to contribute to this film. But unfortunately, time is running out. There's only 40 hours left, and we still are 11% short of our target. So what we're really looking for is snail mail lovers, stamp lovers, people who love all things postal, to come on board and join us on this filmmaking journey. So if you would like to contribute, please go to indiegogo.com. That's IndieGogo.com. And search for Eduardo Muniz, which is EduardoMuniz. And you should be able to find us. And you can have a look at all the different perks we've got on offer. We've got some quite interesting little perks, things that are postal related, especially the Royal Mail, because obviously being a British film, we've got a lot of Royal Mail themed things. If you find that you missed the deadline, but you'd still like to contribute, then you can contact me personally to arrange a donation. My email is rooftap@hotmail.co.uk. And that is rutaptap@hotmail.co.uk.
Your movie sounds amazing. So when can our listeners start to look for it at film festivals?
So we are hoping that the film will be ready for release by summer 2016. We will, of course, be entering it into lots of different festivals. Hopefully it will get accepted to lots of them and it will be shown all over the world. Everyone who contributes to our film £20 or more will also have the chance to view it via an online password protected link. And anybody contributing 40 British pounds or more will also receive a DVD copy. So, even if you can't get to see it at any festivals, there are still opportunities for you to see it online or to receive a copy of the DVD.
So let's finish this off with, how is your campaign to raise money for this film going so far?
Well, it's been an amazing journey so far. There's been lots of real highs and real lows as well. I mean, I think in terms of the lows, all crowdfunding campaigns, you have the panic of, will you ever reach your target? Will you ever be able to get there? Feeling despairing because you've had no donations that day and you're panicking. But I think all that's quite normal, especially now we're getting towards the end of the campaign, to have that fear and worry that all the hard work you've put in, all the stuff, all the things you've dreamed about, you know, that you're not going to make enough money to be able to put them into a reality. But there have also been some incredible highs as well. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, we've had backers now from 17 different countries, 232 of them. And it's been really personally touching to receive emails from snail mail lovers from Morocco, from Hungary, from France, from Japan, just saying how much they like the idea behind the film and how they wanted to contribute and they wanted to see it because they really thought it was a good idea. And that's been really inspiring. I mean, the film is really important to me because, well, it's a project that came out of a difficult time in my life when I was ill and feeling sorry for myself. And now I just feel that actually something pretty amazing is happening out of that bad experience. And I suppose, you know, I'm determined to make this film as good as possible so that I when I look back at my time in hospital and the illness I had, that there's also a good memory attached to it too. So yeah, 40 hours left to raise the money. And I'd just love it if lots of more snail mail lovers and stamp collectors and people got on board this quirky little project about a lot of letters. We really need your support. I hope you like the idea of the film. It's very simple. It's just a film about a man bombarded by the wrong mail. Such a simple idea, but I don't think it's been done before. I think it's quite unique in a way. So hopefully that's answered some of your questions about the project. And if there's anything else you'd like to know, then just, you know, go on the Indiegogo website, have a look, or get in touch with my email via my email address. Feel free to ask me anything.
You know, I think our listeners will find your story truly inspirational about turning something negative into something positive, which is something I always look for in my own life. I really am looking forward to seeing your movie, and I hope you have the biggest success.
Thank you for having me on your podcast, Jessica. And I will hopefully be in contact and let you know how the campaign ends. Take care. Bye-bye.
So hashtag Stamp Stories, Kickstarter follow-up. The Freaks and Errors Film Group has finished their Kickstarter campaign and finished it successfully.
Yay!
As of today, the campaign is over and has netted the project a total of $17,717. That's a lot of sevens. Donated from 83 different backers.
Sure wasn't 87 backers.
And we got to thank people out there who are listening, because it has to be people who were listening to the podcast, because all of a sudden they jumped from 11,000 to 17,000 in a week.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing else occurred. So I'm going to...
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Oh, I know for sure that there were a couple of listeners that messaged us and said, hey, I gave money. One guy, Mr. Sleeker.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Sleeker, please. I know he donated $250.
$250 from one of our listeners.
Nice. So,
if it was in euros, even better.
Oh, I know.
So the money will help them finish the film, hopefully in time to be shown at the 2016 New York Stamp Show. Here at Stamp Show here today, we were happy to be able to make the claim that we helped push the total past the goal, as we have many listeners that confirmed that they did in fact donate to the cause. So Mark Shokala, writer and producer, announced that the money will help cover the cost of flying a team to New York to interview the owner of the 1 cent magenta, shoe designer and fashion mogul Stuart Weissman. To quote Mark, we'll be heading to New York to find out why someone would pay almost $10 million for a stamp, especially if they may or may not be a stamp collector. So check out their website, collectorsunion.com, to get more updates on the Freaks and Errors news as it becomes available. So updates. Cash, I know you're really burning to tell us something interesting.
Oh, yes, always. Hail fellows, well met. I want to push a stamp-worthy topic. Festivus is coming up on December 27th. There is, a Discovery Channel or History Channel?
History Channel.
History Channel documentary, which is going to examine things, including Festivus.
It's called Christmas in the 90s.
Oh, no.
And if we have Kwanzaa, we should have Festivus. So hashtag Stampworthy, hashtag Festivus, hashtag a Festivus miracle.
It's going to be an ugly white vertical stamp with a stupid metal pole on it on a red base.
Hey, Cash.
Just like the one on our table.
We've got a Festivus pole on our table.
Hey, Cash. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to everybody. Merry Christmas. Happy Festivus.
No,
why does it have to be a pole?
Because that's how you celebrate Festivus.
Oh, okay.
And now we must air all our grievances.
Yes. Uh-huh.
On the 27th, you have to air all your grievances. That's how it works.
Yeah. Second thing is, there's a Kickstarter that I saw, which was pretty cool. People might want to check it out. I think it's by PETA, but it's a new roach spray. And it doesn't kill them. It gives them a feeling of self-doubt. And I thought that was a rather interesting Kickstarter.
The what?
I think we can cut that out.
Okay, on
you
that note...
You do come me looking at you like, what?
On that note, I am going to give the remaining minute or two of my stuff to Steve Patillo here to let him tell everybody about his really fantastic show that's coming up in January.
Hi. Okay, Orko Expo is coming up January 8th, 9th, and 10th in 2016. And this is your latest update newsletter. So we'd like to invite you to attend our new location, which is at the Hotel Fullerton, located 1500 South Raymond Drive in Fullerton. And that's at the 91 freeway, located between the 5 freeway and the 57 freeway, on the 91 freeway, exit Raymond North. It will be a three-day stamp show open to the public. It will be free with registration, or $2 if you want to keep your anonymity.
That's different.
It is.
Yeah.
Special latest news, as of yesterday morning, the United Nations Post Office contacted me and confirmed that they are going to release, as a first day of issue, the Year of the Monkey personalized sheet. That will be January 8th. On Friday at 10:30 in the Crystal Ballroom, and their Reese Cover Society is going to produce special Year of the Monkey show covers, which you'll be able to buy in the lobby across from the U.S. Post Office. And that's another thing: the U.S. Post Office has confirmed their participation for the first time in more than a decade, closer to two decades. They haven't been at any show in the Orange County area, and they will be bringing older and newer special issues for your purchase.
Ooh. Nice.
We're
Congrats.
Also going to have two special drawings, one for a C-18 Baby Zeppelin, and the other for a nice White Pine souvenir sheet.
Whoa.
You will not need to be present to win. However, you will have to fill out a coupon and drop them in respective boxes in the Crown Ballroom and the Crystal Ballroom to participate. We have over 40 different dealers. I'm not going to run them all down on here. Professional stamp experts. Oh, wait a minute. Who's that?
Yay.
Professional
stamp
experts will be presenting a live podcast, doing expertizing, and they're going to have a Saturday noon luncheon in the California Room. We're going to have four different meetings or seminars. One's going to be, oh, wait a minute, PSC grading expertizing again, Friday, which starts at 1 p.m., the PNC3 group, which is U.S. Plate Number Coils Study Group, will be Saturday from 11 to 1:45. And then Reese First Day Cover Society, Saturday at 2 p.m. And on Sunday, we have the Japanese Philatelic Society starting at 2 p.m. I said that. Another thing is we have Nordica, which is the Scandinavia Post Office located in the Crystal Ballroom. And very important, we have Regency Superior Auctions going to conduct auctions and viewing all 3 days, and they're also bringing supplies, catalogs, accessories, literature, and major brand supplies that will be available in the Crown Ballroom as well. House of Zion will have auction viewing in the Crown Ballroom, and if anyone's a dealer that's listening, we have a special Dealer Day stamp bourse on Thursday from 9 till 3, wholesale only, located in the Crystal Ballroom. You must be a dealer to participate that day. And that's the latest updates for Orko Expo 2016, January 8th through 10th. Cool. So hopefully you can come. Again, it's free admission unless you want to keep your anonymity and pay $2. Other than that, and there's plenty of free parking in the entrance. And the show is located again on Raymond at the 91 freeway in Fullerton, the Hotel Fullerton. Hope to see you there. Thank you.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Yep.
Me too.
Okay, so Jeff fielded this Facebook question, so I'm going to let him read it.
Okay, so this question comes from Con Vanderham from, I believe, the Netherlands, especially with a name like that. He says, hello, I'm listening to episode 38 of the podcast, and you talk about catalogs and wonder if anyone would buy a digital catalog. I'm using the Michel or Mikkel, depending on where you're from, catalog, the online version, and I like it a lot. It is updated automatically and throughout the year. Unfortunately, it is in German, but being Dutch, that is not a great problem for me. So I replied to him. I said, yes, we would love a digital catalog. Glad to hear that Michelle is keeping on top of things. We have many friends involved with the Scott catalog, including the parent publishing company, Amos Media, and this topic has come up many, many times. They would absolutely love to have a digital version, but they say there is just too much information with too little staff to make this easily available at this time. The international catalog spans 7 massive volumes, which do not include separate specialized volumes for countries like Canada, the UK, and the US. Hopefully we will get one someday, and we do know it is in the works. Thanks for listening, and keep collecting.
Well, of course they're in the works, because it's like you don't have to go into caves and look at the charcoal on the walls anymore. You know, the catalog companies will have to go digital. They might be forced in kicking and screaming, but technology is technology, and you can fight it for only so long. You know, there's a reason why you don't buy horseshoes at a supermarket anymore.
Did you ever buy horseshoes at a supermarket?
Well, in the 1840s and 1850s, you did.
Didn't you go to the blacksmith for that?
No, actually, you could shoe your own horses. Actually, they didn't necessarily do horses,
Stop
but they did mules.
Feeding him.
No. This is true. As a matter of fact,
I was listening to
a CD about a Benjamin Franklin on the car, and he was talking about all this stuff with horseshoeing and stuff like that. Anyway, yes, you could. If you wanted to furrier your own donkey, you could. Or not your donkey,
it's
own mule.
Furrier, it's farrier.
Farrier.
Stop feeding him. Oh my goodness.
So, yeah, to backtrack to what we were really talking about, if you think about it, that's 7 volumes just for the international, and each one is, 1,000 pages?
More. Well, now they're breaking them down, too.
That's the non-specialized.
So that's a lot of freaking information. So we'll get it someday, but they got to figure out, because first they have to do it once originally, the first time. Then they have to figure out for every time they update it, how are they going to handle doing that digitally as well?
Well, they've already done it once. What year is online, right? Or
it's just in US, like a scan.
U.S. is online, but it's mostly... It's it's mostly like PDF images of pages.
It's not searchable or anything.
Updatable or anything.
Well, actually, I think the PDFs are searchable.
Oh, okay.
But they can't update them.
But they also didn't. They did it only for 1 year.
They did.
No, they didn't.
They didn't.
I think that was a test. I think they've got the whole thing up. It's just not as user friendly as we would like it to be.
Well, the other thing, too, that's killing it is it's the same cost as the books.
Exactly.
Which is,
oh, yeah.
So expensive. You have to spend $1,077, I think it is.
Discount, get the whole thing.
You know, you get a discount if you're a dealer, I think. But for a dealer, it's still like $875 or something like
it's
that.
It's ridiculously expensive.
And there's no discount if you want both versions, correct?
Right.
No. Because I'm weird enough. I'm just on the cusp where... Sometimes when I want to look something up fast, I can tolerate reading on a screen, but other times I just want the actual paper book version. I have a full set on the shelves at home, and that's how I would prefer. If they give me a package for both, I wouldn't mind that, but if I have to pay double to get both of those versions, ugh.
Well, for identifying stamps, I like having a book.
Yes, absolutely.
For finding the value of a stamp, it's just as easy to pull it up on the computer.
That's probably a very good way to put it. I would completely agree with that.
Yeah, but if you search for the number 10, how's it going to know what country you're looking for?
Yeah, well, that's the other problem.
Yeah. But the thing is, you know, telling a number 10 from a number, you have a Washington stamp, you look at it, it's 3 cent, you know it's a something from 1851, you don't know unless you look at the whole page.
I think it'd bring a Bo Derek.
Bo Derek?
10.
I got it. It's okay, Steve.
Who's boat?
Stop feeding him.
No, but having the whole page in front of you and seeing the other options, because there, I have, when I go out and I look at people who are like selling their collection, and they'll say, my collection, you know, they think you're ripping them off because you'll offer them a couple $100, and they look at the first stamp and it's number 65. But number 64 chronologically comes before number 65. Number 65 has catalog value of $3.25, and a 64, I think, has $800.
$800,000, depends which book you look at.
Yeah, so they think, wow, look at this, I have five. $1,000 stamps or $800 stamps in this collection. Mm-hmm. That's $4,000. How the heck could this guy possibly...
Here, you keep those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You give them back. You say...
I'll buy it without them.
You can't explain to him that, oops, you did it wrong.
That's a good point. Another I got to remember that. Is,
okay, let's take those out of the equation. I'll give you X for this, and I'll pay you an extra $500 for those stamps once they're expertized through PSC.
And then they never obviously get expertized. But the thing is, you know, the catalog, if you don't have it in front of you, I think you're going to have a little more problem because people are going to pull up the first stamp that occurs.
Well, I do have it digitally on my phone, the U.S. Specialized.
Yeah. So I've got it on my computer.
Yeah. But then if you look at it, somebody that's selling off a collection usually isn't going to be the collector anymore.
Right.
It's a family member, and they're not going to know anything about it except, okay, here's this book.
Here's a green one.
No, they went on eBay, and they saw that stamp selling for hundreds or thousands of dollars, and I have three of them.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, how many one-cent Washingtons have been submitted as the coil waste variety that catalogs
all of them.
$135,000.
613.
Yeah, innumerables. Yes. Ridiculous amounts.
Quarter of a millimeter difference makes the difference between 30,000 or nothing.
Yeah. Well, not nothing.
Okay, a quarter. Oh, I'm sorry. If you're lucky. I think 30 cents.
If you're lucky.
Maybe a nickel.
If they're rare, they're rare.
Yeah.
You're not going to have three of them.
What they should realize, and this is a question, what I get called and they say that they have a 1 cent green Washington and they think it's the $30,000 variety. I said, well, do you have a number one? No. Do you have number two? No. Do you have any high value Columbias? No. Do you have a set of Zeps? No. Do you have C1 through 6? No. Well, then what makes you think you'd have this $30,000 stamp if they never bought any of the other key stamps?
That's a good point.
I had an email on this
that are much less expensive.
This is a true one. A person's uncle died. And their aunt said she absolutely, positively, 100% remembers that he had a C3A in his collection. That's the inverted Jenny stamp.
Okay.
She absolutely remembers that he had one. So now the nephew, you know, is trying to dispose of the collection, and she's sitting there going, this stamp, this $400,000 stamp was stolen. And they said, you know, how can I do it? And I told him, well, all of them, pretty much, we know where they are. We, you know, they don't. There's no chance that he would have just come across one in a collection mm-hmm. somewhere. So, unless he has other $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 stamps in his collection, he's not going to have a C3A. I mean, he may have had a counterfeit one.
Mm-hmm. Reproduction.
Or a reproduction, or, you know, some of the little. The little fancy ones where it shows the inverted Jenny with the guy hanging out, going, you know, that one. The one
from Granada.
Or the one from Granada, or just one cut out of something. So, yeah, the chances of you having just found mm-hmm. something like that, you know, it's like finding the 1 cent, finding a 1 cent magenta laying on the street.
Yeah. Considering
that's why it's so beat up.
Yeah, that's it.
Considering you don't have the expertise to properly identify it in a pile of 1,000 of them anyway, there's really just add a couple of more zeros onto the odds for that. And
The other thing is, she could very well maybe remember him correctly saying he has one. And he was just like pulling her leg or something,
of
too.
Of course. They're telling us a fable, a tale. What I have found over the years is anyone that has ever told me they had one, never had one. And the people who have them never tell anyone about them because of security risks. They don't need to. They're humble. They're locked away in safe deposit boxes. And they go back to the auctions which they usually were purchased from.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, people that have them aren't going, want to see my $300,000 stamp?
Mm-hmm. Oh, $300 for a bad one. Yeah.
The one that got sucked up in the vacuum.
Yep.
So anyway, circling back around.
That was one of the nicest.
Yeah. Before that happened.
Yes.
Yeah, they have some catalogs online. They don't have most because, again, the printing companies make most of their money off printing. And so as time goes by, you will have people printing online more. And the publishing companies are just going to have to change.
Okay, so that kind of wraps that up. It's a very good argument.
Yep.
So our expert topic of the week is black blot stamps. So why, what is, and why do I care?
Is this a first question? Until lunch today, I'd never heard this term. What right. the crap is that? Somebody explain, please.
Are you allowed to say the C word?
That one, yes.
Oh, okay.
Back in the 70s, it was more prevalent, especially with the U.S. Post Office and the people who sat on the board of determining which designs would be issued or not. And the topics would come up. And I remember Ernest Borgnine was on the committee, and they every once in a while they would come up with a topic and they squash it. But it really referred to what went into the Scott catalog, what was a legitimate stamp versus a illegitimate or non-legitimate stamp, which was not used for postal purposes. It was issued for stamp collectors, mostly issued by Arab sheikdoms, especially like Fujair, Sharjah, Umm al-Quwain, and a lot of other areas over there in the Middle East. And they were topicals predominantly to attract beginning collectors or advanced collectors. They wouldn't admit it, but I remember judges scorning and you could not exhibit anything that was not a legitimate stamp. Otherwise, you would get chastised or no award. And yet, secretly, I remember a lot of these judges had their favorite subject matters, and they collected these stamps and sought them, but they would always, shh, don't tell anybody.
Oh, the dirty secret.
Yeah, because these are black blotted. But, you know, shh, don't tell anyone that I save this, you know, whatever topic they were interested in.
So they're kind of like the stepchildren of stamp collecting?
Not even. They're like the illegitimate stepchildren of stamp collecting.
Oh, dear.
These are
with red hair.
Yeah, red hair. These are like stamps, you know, of a country that really doesn't exist, putting out a stamp with Marilyn Monroe on it because they knew that collectors wanted to buy a Marilyn Monroe stamp. So there may be absolutely no postal use for this stamp.
Well, a lot of these countries are also in the Caribbean and in Africa, where their economy highly depends on some of these issues to promote. Basically, it drives their economy and brings in foreign dollars to their country.
Yeah, but the other thing too is that, generally speaking, the seller of the stamp gets like 80% of the money.
Yeah, and these stamps never even see the country that they're issued for.
Well, also, you know, in I have the G. Scott's catalog here because Grenada Grenadines is famous for this. We went through it. Grenada Grenadines since 1969. Has issued 6,200 stamps.
Versus from 1869 to 1969, it was a couple hundred.
Yeah, it was like 200 stamps.
Yeah.
So, and you look at them, and here's Grenada, and they're celebrating like a NASCAR star or some TV idol, you know. Of course, Elvis Presley and Marilyn Monroe, Princess Di, they're still issuing for Michael Jackson.
They did Frozen stamps. We have the Frozen sheet from them.
Even John DuPont and DuPont Chemicals, who owned the British Guiana, had a souvenir sheet made.
Yes, yes.
Really?
Yes.
That's the one that we cut up.
You too could have a stamp made. You have to just order 10,000 of them, and they will print it for you.
What?
Yes. Yep. So if PSE wanted to have their own stamp, you could order 10,000 of them today.
That's how you get your Festivus stamp. There right you. There.
Oh, yeah. There it is. Yay.
And that would add to the tackiness.
Let me get my phone and take a picture of the
black blot. Black blot.
Well, that would be awesome.
But it's very interesting because nudes on stamps, you know, they... there's a lot of them which are very funny, like you'll have communist countries celebrating the United States bicentennial, and in the very next issue having like Mao stamps and how great Stalin is.
Well, I remember seeing nudes on stamps, seeing an advertisement, and thinking it was extremely funny that most of these stamps were issued by Muslim countries.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, my gosh. I've only ever seen two. I've seen one from Spain. What's that? That's a pair of
Elijah.
And then a Marilyn Monroe that's been floating around for a while.
You sheltered.
I didn't know there were more. Well, obviously, they're not in the catalog.
No, they're in the catalog.
It's what?
Some of them are.
Most of them
are. The Playboy stamp catalog?
No. Most of them are like, you know, classic paintings. So they'll show classic paintings.
Okay.
Yeah, but they're issued by Muslim countries. And
although,
I just thought it was very
Guinea-Bissau. Guinea-Bissau put out a set of souvenir sheets for Crystal. I forget what her first name is. Emmanuel something Crystal. I forget her name. Anyway, she's a porn star.
And
they have this set of three souvenir sheets for a porn star.
Nice.
And you sit there and go, yeah, these are good for postage, I'm sure.
Oh, God. It has adds a whole new meaning to the phrase lick and stick.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
You're on timeout when we get home.
I have a feeling Jessica's edit finger is going to reach right over Jeff's shoulder.
As Jeff turns many shades red. Of pink and red.
But anyway, Grenada is interesting because their postal rate, and I don't know what it is now, but in 2008, which is the latest thing they issue, their postal rate was 48 cents, and they were issuing like $5 souvenir sheets. No possible, well, I mean, unless you were sending, you know, express mail or something, but no real possible use for these stamps at those values. It was just so that they could get $5 out of a collector somewhere who wants a stamp commemorating the Pope's visit to Finland or whatever it is. You know, and these topics are just ridiculous. And the catalog company said, yeah, this is ridiculous. This is out of hand. And even with the black blotting, there is still a hell of a lot of stamps that should be black blotted that are not.
And that's another reason why the catalogs have swollen, because of all these unnecessary stamps that have been issued.
Yeah.
But they were issued again for philatelic sales so that people who collect topicals could have more to add to their collection.
So realistically, it's a good reason why they're large, is because they are marketing these what I consider worthless pieces of paper to stamp collectors, and there is the catalog to look them up in.
But why should I have to pay $120 for six different volumes, $700 for a set of catalogs to get a bunch of black blotted issues that I have no interest in the first place?
Well, because you might have an interest in them. I remember I was collecting manure on stamps, horse manure on stamps. And I was
figures.
And I went through. Well, it all has to. I'll go into.
Are you sure it wasn't bull jokes. Manure on stamps?
No, I'll go into it in another one. We can put this down. It has to do with global warming and the turn of the century. They had massive problems with cleaning streets and you know, some disease and stuff like that for horses. You know, everybody rode horses back then. They didn't have cars.
We're back to the shoes again.
So. you know, I was going through all the catalogs, looking at all the topics, looking to see what related to horse manure. And I went through all the catalogs looking for topicals because, you know, the American Topical Society did not have a category on horse manure.
Did you ever find a stamp with horse manure on
it? I found a lot of stamps that had to do with cleaning. Street cleaning, city cleaning, stuff like that.
Anything with a pile?
Nothing with a no stamp with a pile of horse manure. No,
no, that's too bad.
I'm sure you found lots of horses, though.
No, I'm going to.
No, I'm sure.
That's one of the things that I want to exhibit.
Horse plops.
Actually,
crap on stamps.
Street cleaning. I want to go through street cleaning. And originally, it was people may know a book series called Freakonomics.
Yes.
And Freakonomics compared global warming. Well, it didn't compare it. It said global warming is what we worry about today. Exactly 100 years ago, They didn't worry about global warming. They worried about horse manure in the streets and not being able to get rid of all of it. So the problem of 1905 was horse manure. They solved that problem. Global warming is our problem today, and it was created by cars that removed the horse manure problem. So you traded one problem that 100 years later gave you global warming. Now, whether you believe in global warming or not, you know, that's another thing. I happen to believe that there is global warming. I just don't think that it's significant.
I don't think it's caused by anything we have control over. I mean, truly, all those Cadillac Escalades got us out of the last ice age.
Well, the Cadillac Escalades did get us away from horse manures in the street.
I think that was long gone before they came around.
So, but yeah, so, you know, my political views are beyond the topic of stamps, although in actuality they're not, because I was going to make a stamp collection on it. And I have some great global warming. I mean, they put out great global warming stamps.
Oh, yeah. There's some interesting ones. I've seen them.
Yeah,
there's like the atomic war ones.
Really hot issues.
Hot issues, yeah. Oh, well, you talk about black blotted stamps. Some of the stamps were really just for stamp collectors, but there was one from Iceland or Greenland, one or the other. And it showed the polar ice cap. And you put it in your hand, and as your hand warmed the printing, the global ice cap shrunk.
I want that stamp so bad.
An interactive stamp. That's cool.
That is awesome. So, back to what we were talking about.
Well, this is on topic.
So, if you had to define it, let's see if I can make a guess, and if I'm wrong, you guys correct me. So, a black blot stamp would be a stamp that was made by a country, but it was made for commercial use and never intended to be used on postage.
Correct.
And not approved by the International Postal
Union?
No, they probably were.
Universal Postal Union.
No? Okay.
Oh, they're not.
It may or may not have been.
Yeah, may or may not.
When they're printed and then the postmarks are printed simultaneously, it's wallpaper.
Yeah.
Pretty wallpaper. But they're collectible wallpaper.
I know stamps that
I've seen those. I know what you're talking about.
I know stamps from some countries.
CTOs.
That have never been within 1,000 miles of the country that they were supposed to be printed for.
Here's a good for instance. Go to Tuvalu, and they have a beautiful set of locomotive issues. Now, Tuvalu could not support an engine, just a singular engine. The island would sink.
Oh my gosh.
Okay? So what's the purpose of them issuing a set of locomotive stamps other than to reach into a collector's pocketbook?
Right. Well, there was one issue from, and for some reason, the Congo, what was it? There was an interim government of the Congo.
Katanga.
And they printed an issue. It was printed in Britain, and then it was shipped over to the stamp agency in New York. So this stamp issue from the Congo, the closest the stamps ever got to the Congo was Britain, and then they were shipped to New York. And then from there, they might have been sold to some collector in the Congo, but realistically, they were never in the Congo. And that is clearly a stamp that needed to be black-blotted, and it was.
So what does CTO stand for?
Canceled to order.
And it generally consists of one of two things. It's either they take the sheets and they actually print the cancellations on the sheets, or the sheets are actually canceled to demonetize them prior to sale, usually because the issue is no longer going to be valid for use in the country, and they're just getting rid of remainders. Instead of destroying them, what they do is then they'll sell them at a discounted price
by the to collectors. Card
right. Well, well, you would have a stamp with a face value of a dollar that a person would have to pay a dollar for if it was a legitimate image or issue. If you canceled it, now it was just a piece of paper, and you could sell it for a nickel and a dime or whatever to some big packet company, and they would put it in packets and sell it to collectors on the approvals, and anybody who is still around from like the 1970s remembers getting these packets in the mail, and you know, they sell you $50 worth of stamps for $5, and they're all CTOs.
Actually, CTOs are avidly collected in some countries.
Oh yeah, Switzerland. I love Switzerland. The officials have heavy CTOs. China the same way. The biggie is right now, if you collect Switzerland or China, and you collect CTOs, you have to get them mint, never hinged. So they don't want, even though it's used, they want it with fresh, pristine gum. And it's kind of tough to get because when people got used stamps, they didn't care about hinging it. Well, now these were really never used. And people do seek the CTOs, but they want a mint never hinged.
Not mint, just never hinged.
Okay, yeah. CTO never hinged.
CTO never hinged. So it sounds like those Star Trek stamps that we like kind of fall in that category. Granada printing a Star Trek stamp.
But on the other side, the the British Star Wars stamps, you see those on the mail.
Yeah, those were legitimate.
Those were sold at the post office.
And with awesome FDCs on them.
Yeah, well, they're awesome stamps.
Well, they not are. Only that, if you know anything about Star Wars movies, the first six movies, all the soundtrack recordings, all the music was recorded in London. This new movie is the first one that's had its music recorded outside of London, and it was recorded here in L.A.
Well, Jar Jar Binks' makeup came from Takanga, so they have a big tie to the Middle African area.
Did you just make that up?
Yes.
Of course he did.
Okay.
Fake facts with Kaz.
In college, I got a B.S.,
In BS?
Wait, I got a BS too.
I've got a BM to go with your BS.
So one thing I brought up was, so a lot
I
of the...
collected horse crap.
Yeah, what are you going to call it? I collect horse manure.
Yeah, but you said you got a BS, that would be bull crap.
That's it. That was my old joke in college.
Anyone?
Is I got a BS in BS for that exact thing. But now I brought up earlier, and it sounds like it's definitely true. Is so like a lot of the Disney stamps that Jessica and I really like having our Disney roots. Sounds like they fall into this category.
Yeah, they tend to, and the really bad ones do not get licensing rights from Disney before they start printing them. So then Disney goes to the guys and says, hey, you printed these stamps illegally, and they say, sorry, not at home, please.
Leave a message after the tone.
Leave a message after the tone.
That's terrible.
And so actually they have gone to some of these countries at the United Nations through the international courts and tried to get these people to stop or pay or whatever. And they've been semi-successful.
Really?
But again, if you aren't a country, like if you are...
Hi, I'm the Disney guy. Please give me the address for the law offices of the court of Redonda.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, where's the post office in Staffa? I need to... And just so everybody knows, Staffa and Redonda are places that do not exist who have issued plethoras of stamps.
Actually, Staffa does exist.
Well, Redonda exists too.
Yeah.
But they just don't have they don't island. Have a post office. Yeah, they don't have people who use stamps.
They don't even have people.
Puffinland.
Yeah.
I was going to...
Puffinland.
Puffinland has...
Firm Island.
First of all, that is a black blotted, but second of all, that has sort of a cute history to it.
Actually,
it's the island of Lundy.
It's Lundy Island.
Lundy, I've heard that term before, so I was going to say, what's the difference?
They actually have a local post.
Yeah, they do.
They did, and actually, the Lundy was started as a little surcharge that the person charged for the, 50 people who lived on the island to carry it over to the post office in the mainland.
So I was going to say, too, that brings up another question I had that we had touched on a little bit earlier. So what's the difference between then a black blotted stamp versus the stamps of Staffa, which everybody considers like Cinderella's?
Nothing.
You mean locals?
There is no difference. They are both printed for the sole purpose of making money off stamp collectors.
Locals were to move the mail.
No, but he was
Monday Island would be.
Yeah, he was comparing like stamps of Staffa to stamps of Katanga, celebrating the 250th anniversary of something that has nothing to do with Katanga.
Staffa issues I am aware of are those gold foil ones, which have no legitimacy at all.
Well, the gold stamps come from either Staffa or Fujira.
Fujira.
I mean, that's where really you see them from.
Man, you guys got to learn how to pronounce these places.
Fujira?
I haven't even heard of it.
Is that
I've been there.
Fajita.
No. It's in the United Arab Emirates.
Tomato, potato.
UAR.
UAE.
UAE.
So what about cancels that are fake? Are people putting fake cancels on these stamps too?
Why
bother?
No, I have some. She brings up something legitimate. I have Staffa stamps that have actual postal cancels on them. They look like legitimate, real cancels.
Well, you can take anything, any label you want, and stick it on your letter right next to the postage stamp that pays the postage.
I did that.
And it'll get canceled right along with your stamp.
Yeah, I did it.
There's nothing wrong. Those are legitimately canceled labels that did no postal duty because the other stamp paid the postage.
The equivalent of Christmas seals, except Christmas seals actually serve a purpose.
They
do. The money you pay for Christmas seals.
Someone just sent me an email about Spock being alive and being able to get a Vulcan cancel on things.
Did you guys hear about that?
Yeah, I heard about the city of Vulcan.
Mm-hmm, and that's the one.
They wanted to design a cancel for Spock. I did not hear about Spock still being alive. And if he is still alive, he's probably yelling and screaming because he's buried.
Poor Spock.
No, it was a tagline. It was like, Spock lives in Vulcan.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Yeah, it wasn't saying he was alive.
His
memory's been kept alive in Vulcan, Alaska.
And on $5 bills in Canada.
Yes.
Well, Vulcans live for like 200 years?
Something like that.
Something like that, yeah. They far outlive humans.
Yep.
Okay, so again, we're not going to be opening a Jenny sheet. If you want to know why, go to YouTube and look up how to cheat
on
the
Jenny Professional sheet. Stamp Experts?
Yeah, go to Professional Stamp Experts YouTube channel and you'll know why.
So, those 300 of those I bought the other day I didn't have to open?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you know.
So you can email us at stampshowtoday@gmail.com, Twitter, stampshowht, Facebook, stampshowtoday, and our website, www.stampshowheretoday.com. With your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on a Google Voice answer machine anytime. Country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, the second edition just came off the presses of Book of Even More Secrets. You can find it at gradingmatters.com. And keep collecting.
I'm Richard Lehman, and I write about stamps and stamp investing. I'm the president of Stamp Finders, and you are listening to Stamp Show here today.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
This episode of Stamp Share Today is brought to you not only by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, but also by the Philatelic Book of Secrets Volume 2. Volume 2 covers even more secrets. It can be bought alone for $10 or together with Part 1 for $15 at gradingmatters.com. Get yours today!
No such number, no such soul. Return to sender.